Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
It's Film Festival Radio, the show where superstars and future stars happily coexist together. And now, here's your host, Janice Malone.
Welcome to the show. Glad you have tuned in to listen to us. Now listen, let's get right to it. What would you say about an African-American guy who's truly on a mission from God, so to speak? Wait until you hear this. This guy travels around the country meeting, greeting, and he tries to become friends with members of the Ku Klux Klan and other similar hate groups. Is he crazy? Is he just brave? Is he bold? Does he have too much time on his hands? Or is it a combination of all of the above? Well, let me tell you more about him. I'm speaking about our guest, who will be calling in shortly. Daryl Davis is his name, and he's a successful musician and author, and now a filmmaker of a hit documentary called Accidental Courtesy. Well, Daryl and the film's director, Matt Ornstein, will be both calling us in about a couple of minutes or less to discuss this sleeper of a hit documentary that's, man, this thing has been racking up awards at some of the country's top film festivals, such as South by Southwest, the Nashville Film Festival, the Napa Valley Film Festival, and others. It's already opened in New York, Los Angeles, and other key cities as well. Now, back to Daryl. As I said, he's a singer. He's a musician. He has his own band, the Daryl Davis Band. But before that, he is a musician that's performed with legendary performers, oldies guys from the era of the 50s, 60s, Little Richard, Chuck Berry, all those guys. But this whole campaign to try and get the Klan and similar groups to change their racist views, this is not a publicity stunt. Mm-mm, not at all. Daryl's been on this crusade for many years. Now, the question that he bases his campaign on to these hate groups is this question. How can you hate me when you don't even know me? Fair question, I think. But as Dr. Phil often says, how's that working for him? Well, according to Daryl, he's built his relationships person by person with Klan's people, and his campaign, as he says, has proven to be remarkably quite effective. Again, according to Daryl, many members of the Klan that he's connected with have reconsidered their beliefs about minorities and others that they don't like. He says some have even left the organization as a result of getting to know Daryl. Again, this award-winning documentary film is called Accidental Courtesy, and you can find out when it's coming to your city by going to accidentalcourtesy.com. I tell you, the timing for this film could not be more perfect, especially in lieu of the racist and the racial fallout that has happened across the country from the recent presidential political season last year. So as they often say, timing is everything. And I think in this case, this is definitely 100% true. I see that we have phone lines lighting up here. So that is obviously Daryl and his director, Matt. So let's bring them on the air right now here. Do we have them?
Hello, it's Film Festival Radio. Do we have Daryl or do we have Matt?
This is actually Karen. Daryl and Matt are dialing in shortly, like right now, any second.
Okay.
Apparently I can be on to just listen in, or am I not allowed to be on this?
No, you are just fine. I think we have both
okay.
of them. Are you, yep. Both of you guys are on
here.
Okay. Well, we have everybody. I feel like I'm in class and the teacher is all here.
Yeah. Please just ignore me. I'm just here to listen. I am not a part of this interview.
Okay. like the principal. I'll be the teacher, and you guys will be our students. How about that?
There you go.
Okay, well, first of all, yes, that's what I was about to say. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Matt. Let me make sure I got your name pronounced correctly. Is it Ornstein or Ornstein?
Ornstein. That was perfect.
Ornstein. Okay. And, of course, we have the young man who is, I guess we could say, the star of the show, Daryl Davis, musician, singer, and now I guess we can say filmmaker. Hi, Daryl. Nice to meet you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's jump right in here with both our hands and feet and say congratulations on this, what is turning out to be an amazing, well-received, well-awarded documentary, Accidental Courtesy, and you guys are racking up awards at film festivals left and right here. So are you guys, are you surprised at the success that this film is having or what?
I mean, yes and no. As a filmmaker, I'm very flattered, but as someone who was really compelled by the story, I'm not surprised other people feel that way too.
And so,
I'm very happy for its success. I think, you know, that the story is long overdue, and I appreciate all the hard work that that Matt and his brother, the producer, Noah, have put into this film to get it out to the public. And it's, you know, it's being, you know, widely reviewed. You know, it hasn't been widely seen yet because it's just now coming in into certain select theaters. But the promo for it has been, you know, widely reviewed, the trailers and the articles that have come out, and people are very, very excited. And it's generating a lot of conversations, which is what this country needs to have. And I'm very grateful that this film is one of the impetuses for people coming together and talking about people who are diametrically opposed in their racial ideology, sitting down and talking with each other.
Yeah, it's been very gratifying, for sure.
It's gratifying, obviously, yes, for as filmmakers to see the fruits of your labor being recognized and talked about. I mean, you guys have had articles in such top publications such as Variety Magazine and so many others. Award winners at South by Southwest Film Festival, Nashville Film Festival, Napa Valley Film Festival, and probably others that I don't know about. So you're on a roll here. You guys are on a roll.
Yeah, I like to think so. It's also a conversation that people now more than ever want to have. And if this film, like Daryl was saying, if this film provides a vehicle for that, then that's the best thing we could hope for.
Now, the timing for the release of this documentary could not have been more perfect in lieu of the conflicts and controversy and mayhem and craziness of this past presidential election.
You know, if I may interject something there, actually the timing for this documentary would be perfect at any time. I think the election, their timing was perfect for the documentary. But the documentary would have been perfect at any time. I think the election simply the timing of the election simply enhanced this.
Now, obviously, some of the film festivals that the film was submitted to were before the election really picked up steam. So after the election really got going, and especially in November, did you guys see an increase or a more discussion or more talk about the film then or what?
It is interesting. You know, when the film premiered at South By in March, Trump had been endorsed by the KKK a couple weeks before, and that was a major topic of conversation that sort of raised interest in the film. And then as we were taking it out on the film circuit for spring and then in fall, these stories were sort of increasing in pitch and in frequency. And then after the election, we were actually showing at film festivals for the couple of weeks following the election. I saw the biggest crowds, the discussions so long they had to be shut down. And I really saw people have a hunger for this sort of material that I could not have anticipated. And at this point, as people move forward and try to kind of pick up the pieces, I'm hoping we continue to be part of that conversation.
Absolutely. It's certainly needed more than ever. beginning with, you know, it all begins with, obviously, dialogue. And so now you have dialogue and you have a film to go along with it to open things up. So, okay, let's back up. Let's roll it back here. Daryl, how did all of this, I mean, you are a very talented musician. You've traveled the world as a musician. You're still obviously creating music with some of the biggest names in rock and roll music and blues music and what have you. But when did this first start with you, you know, doing the kumbaya-ing with the KKK here? How did this all get started with you?
Well, it got started, you know, when as a child, at the age of 10, I had a very racist experience. And I was not really prepared for it, and nor could I understand it. Because back at that time, my parents were U.S. Embassy, U.S. Foreign Service, and we were assigned to various countries overseas. And in my elementary grade classes overseas, I was surrounded by other kids from other embassies from all over the country, I mean, all over the world. So literally, I had people from Italy, Germany, Nigeria, Japan, Russia, France, in my classes. And we all got along. There was never any issue. But every time I come home after an assignment from overseas, you come back to the States for 9 months or a year, I would either be in newly integrated schools or still segregated ones, and there was not that amount of diversity or multiculturalism in the classroom, which was either black kids or black and white kids, depending upon whether you went to the segregated or newly integrated school. And so when I was overseas, I was literally living 12 to 15 years ahead of my time, because that scenario had yet to come to our country here in the United States. And so when I had a racist experience at the age of 10, and I didn't understand why I was attacked, and it was explained to me because of the color of my skin, it made absolutely no sense to me, because I've been around white people all over the world, let alone my own country, and it didn't make any sense. So I formed a question in my mind of how can you hate me when you don't even know me? At the age of 10, I didn't know how to get answers to it, and I'm still not sure there is an answer to it. But in my adult life, I still have that question burning in me. You know, I majored in music, got my degree in music. So music became my profession, but studying race relations became my obsession, if you will. And so I was bound and determined to get that answer. And I thought, you know, who better to ask that question to than someone who would join an organization whose whole premise is hating those who do not look like them and who do not believe as they believe. So I began seeking out supremacists. And that's where we are today.
And so where was your very, very first encounter with a Klan member? Was it in their at their headquarters in Alabama, or where was this?
No, actually, it was in a parking lot. My very first encounter was where I wasn't interviewing somebody, was in a parking lot where I saw a man beating up a woman. And I pulled my car into a parking space and got out, and the guy looked up and called me a name and asked if I wanted a piece of him, and I said, sure. And he came at me, and I beat the daylights out of him, and he had to go to the hospital, and then he had to go to the police station after he was treated. And it turns out that he was a Klansman. I went to the rescue of his female victim, who was his ex-fiancée, and she agreed to come to court and testify on my behalf, also on her behalf, because he you know, brutally beat her in the head and the face. And she was the one who told me that he was a Klansman. He was a member of the county fire department up there where I was. And so that was my first encounter. My second encounter was a lot more friendly. I was performing in a country western bar where a gentleman approached me after my set with his country band. I was the only black guy in the bar, only black guy in the band. And he was astonished that a black guy could play piano like Jerry Lee Lewis. And so he was fascinated by this, and not realizing that Jerry Lee Lewis learned to play from black blues and boogie-woogie piano players. So he and I, you know, sat down and had a discussion. It turns out he was a Klan member, and he would begin bringing Klansmen and Klanswomen to this bar. Every time I would come back there with the band, because he wanted to show them about this black guy playing piano like Jerry Lee. So that was you know, engaged with the Klansman, you know, in a conversation. And that he later provided me information that would put me in contact with the leader of the Klan when I started writing my book. And I would interview that guy. I would interview other Klan leaders up and down, up north, down south, Midwest, west, and a lot of publicity would come out of that. And some of that publicity came across the eyes of Matt Ornstein, who is the director of Accidental Courtesy, the current documentary that is out. Thank you.
That is fascinating. So, Matt, when you first did you read Daryl's book first, or how did you get involved with this?
I became aware of Daryl through a newspaper article, and then I read his book. But I needed to meet with him in person just to kind of, I mean, he seemed very engaging and like it would all work out, but you can't embark on a project like this until you meet with someone in person. And so I took the train from New York to D.C. where he picked me up at the station. And while he drove me from the station to where he lives in Maryland, he began telling me some of the stories that would eventually be the film. And I knew by the time we crossed the line over to Maryland that there was a film here.
And how long ago was this? How many years ago?
The whole process was about maybe 3 years from the very beginning. I would say 2 years off and on of filming. And, you know, the climate was, obviously these issues have been relevant in America for longer than I care to think about, but the climate was a little different then. We were still sort of concerned about reminding people of the prevalence of these hate groups and these viewpoints. Now, if I was starting the film today, I might not feel as much of a need to reiterate that aspect of it.
And so, Daryl, how many years total has it been that you have been, I guess, is it safe to say, kind of on a crusade to try to change the mindset of neo-Nazi types or white group type people about people of color as well as people of other cultures?
Well, my first, you know, racist experience was at age 10. And then 5 years later, I had a run-in with the head of the American Nazi Party. A fellow named Matt Cole, K-O-E-H-L, who took over the organization from its founder, George Lincoln Rockwell, after Rockwell was murdered. And this guy said he was going to ship me back to Africa when I was 15 years old. And that's what really got my ball rolling. That, you know, I need to find answers to my question. I need to find it now. And I bought all kinds of books, read articles, collected everything I could, asked people all kinds of questions. So I self-educated myself on this thing. And I was in high school at the time. And when I graduated high school, I went to college. And even though, you know, I was in college studying, majoring in music, I was still on the side, you know, fascinated by this race thing. And I later sought out that same individual, the head of the American Nazi Party, to say he was going to ship me back to Africa. I sought him out after I graduated from college. And I approached him and talked with him. And this would lead to other things. After him, I met the guy, the Klansman, in the bar where he was attending my performance. And that was just, you know, by happenstance. I didn't know that the Klan was going to be in that particular bar. But I run into these kinds of people from time to time, you know, throughout my life. Just being black in America, you know, you're bound to encounter racism. I, you know, as a musician, there have been places, you know, that I've been told I cannot go in and play. I've had, you know, club owners and promoters say, you know, how many black people are there going to be in your band and things like that, which is just, you know, fascinating to me that these are considerations before somebody hires me. So I've been on that quest. I guess the ball started rolling in 1974 when I was 15, but that was prompted by my incident at age 10. In 1990-91 is when I started writing the book, towards the end of 90, beginning of 91. And the book
Give me the name of the book again.
The book is called Clandestine, spelled with a K. Clan-destine relationships. Came out at the end of 97, beginning of 98. And then I took it out of print back in November of 2014, but it will be back out again, revised, this spring.
Okay. Now, gentlemen,
Jenna?
During the making, yes.
We got time for one more question. Sorry for interrupting.
Okay, we have one more question. Oh, my God, I have so many, as you can probably see. Let me try to get two really quick. Daryl, I understand that you are wanting to open a museum, that you have a collection of Klansmen's robes and different types of items and artifacts like that. Tell me about that really quick.
Yes, I do. I've collected many robes and hoods and different artifacts that I want to put on display in a museum so people would never forget the history of the Ku Klux Klan. And I also want to invite people who have left the Klan as well as current Klansmen to come in and lecture and explain their, you know, their positions, and people to come in and learn, because bringing people together with those who they don't know, I think is beneficial for both parties, and I think it will mitigate the amount of racism that we have in our country, and obviously we sorely need that now.
Okay, my last question before I get shut off here to both of you guys. I understand that not everybody is exactly happy about what you guys are doing, especially you, Daryl. I understand that Thomas Robb, the Klan's national director, is not very happy, nor are certain people with Black Lives Matter. So my question is, have you guys been threatened while you were making the film, or Daryl, have you, before you started making the film?
Well, every now and then that happens to me, you know, periodically, because, I mean, after all, you're dealing with people who hate you. So, yes, you know, there have been threats here and there. I know Thomas Robb very well. I know the guys from Black Lives Matter, you know, a little less well. But, you know, there are people who will always obviously disagree with you, and that's their prerogative. But I will continue my work.
And, you know, I think that right now this is really a time when people need to, we all need to pull together and present a unified front. And so this film is obviously a small piece of that, but the discussions that it can promote, I think, can be really helpful moving forward with groups we agree with and disagree with. And, you know, I just want to point out that Black Lives Matter is, you know, a group with many different chapters. Some agree, some disagree. On the whole, they're an organization I personally support.
Okay. And the fact that Tom Lovell even sit down and talk with us is a great step forward.
Okay. So you guys, I guess people can, listeners, if they want to find out when they can see the film coming to their city, go to your website, accidentalcourtesy.com, or where else?
I'll do a real quick wrap-up. Accidentalcourtesy.com, we have a Facebook page. We're in theaters in New York right now, starting Friday, expanding to other cities. We're on PBS the 13th. We go to iTunes and Netflix after that. I understand your audience is sort of a filmmaker and indie film-friendly audience to support independent films right now, to make independent films right now, to make films about things you believe in and you care about is more important than it has ever been. So I encourage everyone. This started as me reading a newspaper article and calling my brother, and it's expanded to the point where we're all over the country. Don't be afraid to take on an idea that may seem difficult or unwieldy or run with it, because there's a hunger for it out there. And thank you so much for your time and your attention.
Absolutely. And I just appreciate you guys. I know I've been trying to get you, as Karen can tell you, for several weeks. Thank you guys so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to see it blow up even bigger. So, my students, Karen, Matt, Daryl, class is dismissed. And
thank
thank all of you for
thank
being
you so
here
much.
Today. Okay,
thank
take
you
care
so
now. Bye-bye. Okay, and we'll be back right after this.
Film Festival Radio with Janice Malone will be right back after this.
With me, Janice Malone, and we have a lot of fun around here sometimes. Listen, you can drop us a line. Yeah, you can do that, filmfestivalradio@gmail.com, or you can visit our website, filmfestivalradio.com, and there you will find the links to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. You will find all kinds of really cool trailers, film trailers of different filmmakers who are pitching their films out there, and we have a lot of news about filmmakers, film information, entertainment news as well. So go to the website, filmfestivalradio.com. Okay, I'm going to be looking for your email now, okay? Listen, we have a new segment. If you heard the new intro, the bumper music there just a second ago, the new segment is called Back in the Day Today. And this is a new segment where the show will be going back in time to share with you some interviews that I've done over the years with celebrities who are now superstars. Yeah. Well, you know what? Back in the day, when many of these interviews were done, that was not the case at all. Oh, no, no, no. They were still gorgeous, and they were still handsome, and they had their talent going on. But they were nowhere near being the household names that they are now today. You know, being on that coveted A-list of the entertainment industry as they are now, not the case at all. It's a lot of fun listening to them. You know what? We're going to start the segment off, this new segment, I should say, the premiere segment. We're going to start it off with Steve Harvey. Yeah, Steve Harvey. At the time of this interview, I was working at an FM radio station in Dallas, Texas. And Steve was back then touring the country doing stand-up comedy. He lived in Dallas full-time then. And he was hosting Showtime at the Apollo. I think it was kind of at the start when he first started hosting the show. But this was long, long before he did Kings of Comedy, the sitcom that he did, The Steve Harvey Show. This was long before all of that. So in this clip, you will hear Steve and I on the air at this station, at this radio station, and we're talking to listeners who are calling in. And Steve is promoting a new comedy club that he had just opened up back in the day there in Dallas. And the listeners are having a lot of fun talking to him. I'm having a lot of fun talking to him. Steve and I sound like I sound like I'm about 10. Steve sounds like he's about 12. So, the show then, it was a two-hour show, and so Steve was on for the first hour, and we had so much fun with him, he agreed to stay for the second hour. So that's where we pick up this clip. So take a listen to Steve Harvey and I back in the day in Dallas, Texas. So take a listen.
With Steve Harvey, I'm your host, Janice Malone, and wow, we had some fun. We're still having fun. It's not over, is it?
That's a good show. Yeah, I like that.
I'm having fun. You know, I always have fun. But all you people that's going to Redbird tomorrow, Steve will be there. It is National Whoop Your Child with a Smile. Steve's going to have his strap out and look out.
Right now, you watch. People going to be all over the mall looking for me, talking about he wasn't there. He always lying. I'm not going to be at the mall, so don't go out there and look for me. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
I was out there with my camera and some ink pens.
We're only kidding, y'all. But anyway, we're going to, we've been talking about a young man, a very talented young man, Cedric Phillips, all night almost, and we are so honored to have him on the hotline. Cedric, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Cedric.
How you doing?
Cedric Phillips. What's up, boy?
I'm done, see?
How you doing?
I'm chilling.
Well, Cedric, tell us about your experience at Showtime at the Apollo.
Well, it was a very good experience. It was different. It was just a talent show to me.
Just another talent show. Well, now, did you find the audiences? You know, Apollo is known the world over for their tough, hardcore audiences. Did you find them that tough?
Yeah, they are. You know.
Hey, that audience right there, I'm telling you right now, and I done been on a lot of stages, man. At one point in my career, I was, what am I talking about at one point? I'm still doing it. 476 cities. So I've been on a lot of stages. I've been on a lot of stages. So the Apollo in Harlem, New York, is the toughest stage in the world. I don't care where you go, what you do. If you can do well on Showtime at the Apollo, you've done something.
So it lives up to its reputation.
Oh, it is impossible to walk out there without being nervous. Mm. I'm nervous every time I walk out there. If I'm hosting or doing stand-up, I'm nervous. Say it, man, were you a little nervous that night? Cedric.
I was little. I mean, not really, because I prayed a lot. I mean, I prayed a lot, so I didn't feel nothing.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, Cedric, how old are you?
I'm 20.
You're 20?
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of pressure. You know, 20 years old, that's still quite young. You said you prayed. Did you have any other kind of, like, a little good luck charm, a special tie, anything like that on to bring yourself good luck?
No, it was just that a while back when my friend was murdered, before he died, he told me, he said, you're going to make it. And every time I just think about that and I just take care of business, I try to do my best.
Well, there you go. I tell you what, man, if they tune in this Saturday night at 10 o'clock on Channel 21, y'all can see me and this brother right here. He's bad. Cedric Phillips, I ain't telling you how it turned out. Y'all going to be proud of this boy right here. This boy is insane. S-A-N-G, sang.
Right.
He's singing is something else. This boy can say. Said, you turn it out, man.
Sang.
Well, thanks.
Sang.
I'm going to look for you, man.
I'm going to look for you too, man.
In peace, brother.
All right, Cedric, thanks for calling, and good luck with your singing career.
Okay, thank you.
After Saturday night's show, maybe we can have you on. You can give us some more insight about what's going on with your career, all right?
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot.
Okay,
we're going to quickly go to line 5. G.A.?
Hey, Steve.
I know this voice anyway. You don't even have to say no more.
My main man.
Is this Governor Anderson?
You got it.
Hey, y'all, this man's voice you hear right now is the man that's building Steve Harvey's Comedy House.
He is
the owner of Associated Contractors, and he's the general contractor. Governor, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm all out. I'm on my way in.
You're on your way in. How the club looking?
Great. Super. Can't wait to get them in now.
This brother done built, y'all, this man done built a club. When y'all see it, my plans, his workers, some of his ideas, we got a great club going. And Governor, man, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. But on opening night, I'm going to introduce everybody to Governor Anderson, the owner of Associated Contractors Building Company. He builds churches all over the city. He does homes. The baddest builder. I'm going to introduce the world to Governor Anderson. Y'all going to meet the man.
All right, Governor, sound like you're going to be there to lay the laws down.
Oh, I got to lay the laws down. I keep it down every day. But all this is my main man here.
Well, that's my man, too. That's great. Well, Gov, thanks for calling.
All right, I'm going in.
All right.
And y'all have a good night. I'm enjoying this until I get home.
All right, well, you get some rest now.
Got to.
All right.
See you in the morning, Governor.
All righty. Good night.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to take a break, and we come back. We're going to finish up our calls. I know you guys have been holding a while, but hold on. We'll be back in a minute.
Gump? The gook?
No.
The dump?
The gump.
The dump?
The gump.
Silent.
I went this morning before I left the house.
Nah, Steve, I saw you at Montgomery, Alabama, man.
Oh, Montgomery, yeah.
Yeah, they call it the gump, man.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Hey, man, I had a question I wanted to ask you. You say you can't do nothing else. Can you collect unemployment?
Because I'm a working man.
I heard that.
You know, you getting unemployment?
No, man, I hadn't gotten unemployment since 1940.
A lot of stuff happened in the 1940s.
Yeah, that's when I was getting a whooping.
Oh, God.
Ken, you just called in for your own personal entertainment, didn't you?
Yeah. Ken, are you a frustrated comic?
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
I'm serious enough, though, man. Like, when I was in Montgomery, had you done, like, a comedy tape and put it on the air, the crowd might have been better. Seriously.
Well, I don't know which Montgomery date. You talking about the last Montgomery date I did?
Yeah.
Oh, no, man. Yeah, brother. The promoter on that show added me on that show at the last minute, and they added the show at the last minute.
Okay.
That show was supposed to be in Houston, and they only had 3 days advertised. That's their problem.
Oh, okay.
Don't feel bad for me. My check the same.
Oh, okay.
3,000 people. My money in my pocket before I tell our joke.
I heard that.
Appreciate it, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
All right.
Holla at you.
All right. Ken. All right, we're going to line 7.
All right.
Ward. You gone, Ward? All right, Ward. We're sorry we held you like that. What about Tim? Are you there on line 1?
Tim. Yeah, I'm here. How y'all doing?
Doing great. Got something to tell Steve.
Yeah, welcome back to Dallas, first of all. And I just wanted to know how far in ahead of time do you have to reserve? And what's the number over to the club for the reservations? And what exactly do you have to do?
The number over at the club, first of all, is 780. No, it's you know, it's a new business, so the receptionist over there next week could be a little bit new. It's going to take a time for us to iron out the kinks. The system is a good system, but it's going to take people time to learn the system. But you'll be able to purchase tickets for the following week. Starting that Monday of the week, you'll be able to purchase tickets for that week.
Okay, I was just wondering if you were going to be doing anything like 2, maybe 3 weeks ahead of time.
Well, we will for special events.
Okay.
But
I know it's going to be crowded. It's going to be hard to get in.
But one thing about the club, is for, there are no standing room tickets sold.
Okay. Oh.
Everyone will have to be seated because we won't have that blocking your view and all of that stuff.
Okay,
so it'll only be by seat assignment. So even if you... It will be crowded, but you'll be in your seat, though. You won't have to worry about looking over anybody's head.
And Janet?
Yes?
Oh, okay. Hey, you're doing a good job.
Well, I'm trying.
And welcome to the airwaves.
Well, thank you so much.
We love you out here.
Oh, well, I'm glad that somebody loves me. It's hard to find love.
Yeah, well, nice move, Tim. It ain't working. We love you out here. Yeah, right, Tim.
Still,
nice try.
Thank you for holding it. Thank you for calling. Call us back next week.
And tell your wife we said hi.
She isn't.
That's what I thought.
Hi, Tim's wife.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye,
Fix
Tim.
Fix it up. That's why I get drove by up in here.
See, we got about 30 seconds left in the show.
I just want to say hello to Tim's wife.
I do, too. On behalf of Tim's wife,
for
hello.
Tim just getting murdered.
Yeah, we don't.
But I know what Tim meant, though. Tim didn't
mean
nothing about it. He just meant that we love you, having you on the air and everything.
Oh, that's what he meant.
That's what he meant.
Well, Steve, you have taken us where laughter has gone nowhere else before, and I do appreciate you taking the time for both hours.
I appreciate it, man. I said I enjoyed it, though.
I had more fun. I think the callers enjoyed talking to you, too. You have a great following out here.
And I enjoyed the callers, man. It's deep the way the phones light up. I appreciate everybody's support, man, and keep paying attention. Hopefully next week the house will be open, bar any mishaps or anything else that the contractors come up with. If not, the following week. But we coming at y'all. We coming at you strong. Beautiful club, great facility, adult entertainment. You're going to love it.
All right, give us the telephone number one more time, Steve. Right. We want to, again, thank all of you callers who held on and who called in, and you really made this an enjoyable 2 hours. We also want to thank our guest in hour number one, Gary Reeves of Channel 8. And we had a ball here. If you think this was crazy, next week we're going to get even more crazier. Well, it's not going to be crazy. It's going to be a lot of fun, I think, informative. We're going to have a lady who has been on the national talk show circuit. She was a witness in the Mike Tyson trial. She's going to be our guest. We're also going to have a lady who lost. She used to weigh 267 pounds, and she is now a size 2.
I don't believe it.
I've
and if
seen
you
her.
Sitting out there believing
I've
it, you crazy too. Ain't no way in the world you going from 260 to no size
I've 2. I've seen her, Steve.
Well, if she did, I'm going to take a shot at how you can lose that
all
much
right.
weight.
Well, she's been, we've all seen her on television, and tune in next week, and you'll be able to talk to
y'all,
this woman.
Y'all be listening for any coughs.
Okay.
If she coughs, you know how she lost her weight.
Oh, no, stop it. I've seen that woman. No. We're going to wrap it up here. I'm Janice Malone, and we've been talking television, and up next is...
Okay, up next is me today. Oh, my God. As I told you, Steve and I both, we sound like we were kids. We really were kids, especially me. I'm not kidding you. I was that young. But anyway, of course, today, Steve Harvey is a superstar talent. Oh, my God. He's host of Family Feud, the show Little Big Shots, the Steve Harvey talk show. He's a major film star as well as a best-selling author who's reportedly worth over $100 million. And he flies around the world in a private jet as well. And what am I doing today? Well, let's not even discuss that at all. Okay, we'll be back with more of Film Festival Radio right after this.
Hey, I'm Sherry Shepherd, and you're listening to Film Festival Radio with Janice Malone.
It's Acting Up. News about auditions and tryouts that could make you a star.
Oh, Okay, everyone, we are back here with our segment, Acting Up, where we provide you with a lot of auditions that are taking place nationwide. Many of these television networks and casting agencies that are affiliated with these networks are looking for people all over the country. So listen up. Go get your pen, go get your paper, and let's write it all down. So starting with our first audition, we all love this show. It's a hit show, one of those hit talent competition shows, So You Think You Can Dance. The hit dance show is coming back for its 14th season. Yes, they are casting amazing dancers and even more amazing talented choreographers for the show. And you must be between the ages of 18 to 30 before you can submit your material to be considered. Now for this season, they're not casting children this time around. Again, you have to be between the ages of 18 to 30 this time around for this season to try out for So You Think You Can Dance. Now this is what you need to do. You need to email the following information to the casting people. You need to send your name, your age, the city and state where you live, a video clip. Doesn't have to be very long, you know, maybe a couple of minutes at the most. It really should be like a minute 30 or something like that as far as the video. And a photo of yourself and a contact telephone number where they can reach you. And you need to send all of these items to Kate, K-A-T-E, Rangy, R-A-N-G-E-Y, casting at gmail.com. Okay, once more time, send in your name, your age, the city and state where you live, a brief video of you in action dancing. And you know the show, if you've seen it, they have all kinds of genres of dancing. You just need to be good and you need to be talented. Anyway, also a photo of yourself and the telephone number as to how they can reach you. And send it again to Kate, K-A-T-E, Rangy, R-A-N-G-E-Y, casting at gmail.com. And I hope that we can see you on So You Think You Can Dance. So here's our second audition. Now this audition is for the children. You grown-ups, you got to fall back on this one. The Food Network's hit television show, Kids Barbecue Championship, better known as Kids BBQ Championship. Well, they're coming back also. This is their second season. They did so well on the first season. Brand new season. So the show is now casting children who can grill. Yes. You know how to grill? Your child knows how to grill, knows their way around the barbecue pit there. If you think your kids or your child can grill with the adult there, and they're not afraid of a little competition. Well, the casting directors may be looking for your child. They're looking all over the nation for kids who are master grillers, grillmeisters, little bitty mini-me grillmeisters. And if they are ready to show off their barbecue skills on the Food Network's hit show, they might get a chance to win $20,000 in cash and prizes, as well as a feature spot in the Food Network magazine. So you got to be talented, and you got to be a child, and you got to know what you're doing with a grill. I don't know diddly squat about grilling, so they would have to teach me something. So if you think your child or your grandchild or your nephew, your niece, your neighbor, or whomever has what it takes to try out for the Food Network's Kids BBQ Championship show, this is what you need to do. You need to go to the website, www.jscasting.com. And if you go to that website, you will find all of the information as to where to submit, what to submit, and the deadlines and what have you. Once again, that's jscasting.com is the website. And if you have any questions that you would like to ask the casting people, the email address for them is bbqkidscasting@gmail.com. That's BBQ as in barbecue, bbqkidscasting@gmail.com. And that is if you have questions that you'd like to ask the casting people. But maybe all of your questions will be answered if you go to their website. Should be www.jscasting.com. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. And finally, our last audition here. The Discovery Channel is looking nationwide, high and low, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, everywhere. They're looking for everybody. If you are a highly skilled fabricator, mechanic, auto mechanic, fabricator, mechanic, who knows classic American cars inside and out, they're looking for you because you might get a chance to appear on a new reality television show that the Discovery Channel is launching. Now, look, this is an opportunity for some fun. You can get to play around and show off your talents, you know, with the hot rod pros there. It's going to be great. Plus, you'll get to get paid for it. You'll be working with a successful team of auto restorers, and you guys can, or gals, can put your heads and talents together to restore some forgotten old classic cars and make them all shiny and impressive all over again. I'm a big, big fan of old classic cars. I just love them. But again, if you have what it takes, fabricator, mechanic in the auto restoration world of American classic cars, this national TV reality show is looking for you. And what you need to do is email your name, your telephone number, the location, city and state where you live, a recent photo of yourself. You can do that on your Android or your cell phone or whatever you got, iPhone. And also include just a brief paragraph on why you think that you are right for this show. Now, don't write a bio here. I mean, a whole autobiography or something. Don't do all of that. Again, email your name, your phone number, city and state where you live, a recent photo of yourself, and why you think you're the right person for this show. You need to send that information to pilgrimcasting@gmail.com. Once again, that's pilgrim, P as in Paul, I-L-G-R-I-M, casting@gmail.com. And who knows, you might get cast, you might get some money, you might get national notoriety, you might become a star. You never know. And then we'll get to see your talents in the auto restoration world all at the same time, and you'll get paid for it. That's a pretty good deal if you ask me. Well, listen, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. If you have any questions about any of the auditions that we just read, you can always drop us a line, filmfestivalradio@gmail.com, and you can go to our website, filmfestivalradio.com. Make sure that you let me know that you're listening, and we would love to hear from you at any time. Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of the show, and we'll see you guys on the next edition of Film Festival Radio. Make it a great day, great week, and all that kind of great stuff, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Film Festival Radio with your host, Janice Malone. Be sure to download this and other episodes at filmfestivalradio.com.